Yaakov Avinu marries two wives, Leah and Rachel. And we know that there was a strain in the relationship between Yaakov and Leah because initially he wanted to marry Rachel. And it was thanks to Laban's trickery that he ended up marrying Leah first. And that caused some sort of uneasiness in the relationship between the two of them. Some of us understand that when we find the morning after the wedding, Yaakov says Vihine Leah. The pasuk says Vihine Leah. It indicates this disappointment, understandably, after he had worked all these years for Rachel, to marry Rachel, and here he was married to her older sister, who was never part of the negotiations that existed originally between him and their father. But ultimately, pasuk says in Perichav Tes that he marries Rachel and then he works for another 7 years. Because Baruch Hu was obviously attuned to the challenge that faced Leah being second best and being the undesired wife and the one who was not loved by Yaakov Avinu to the same extent as he loved Rachel. And the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu responded was that he blessed Leah with children quite a while before Rachel was blessed with children, and many children at that. And that's where we find in four consecutive psukim, Vatar Leah, Vatar Od Leah, Vatar Od Leah, Vatar Od, she has one child after another, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. Let's pay careful attention to the way that the pasuk describes each one of these events of childbirth. So first you have Vatikra Shmo Reuven. She calls his name Reuven. Ki Arma Ki Rasham Ba'ani Ki Ato Yevani Ishi. Leah responds to the first child, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has seen the suffering that I'm undergoing, and there's also a ray of hope. Ato Yevani Ishi. Now that I have brought this child into the world together with my husband, there is a new renewed possibility in our relationship. Now my husband will love me. Vatar Od B'Teil Bein. Ki Shama Hashem Kisnu Anochi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu heard my tefillos, and he heard the unfortunate damper on the relationship that exists between me and my husband, and has blessed me with another child. Vatikra Shmo Shimon. And then number three. V'Teil Bein. V'Tomer Ata Apami Lavei Ishi. Eli Ki Yalati Lo Shlosha Banim. Now I have three boys. Three boys for sure. Apami Lavei Ishi. Now my husband. What does Yalavei mean? What does it mean to be Milava, Milava Malka, or to go to a Levaya? How would you define Halvaya? So the answer is to accompany someone, to join someone, to be with them, especially when it comes to the context of both a Levaya, a final tribute is a final escort, perhaps a better way to describe it. There's a mitzvah of Levaya. To after you have a guest over at your house, to walk them out and set them on their way wherever they happen to be going. Make sure they have proper directions. Make sure they have a snack on the road to keep them satisfied and keep them healthy and keep them safe. Whatever is necessary to put them on the right path in the next stop in their journey. That's the same thing is true to show respect as one departs this world. That's also sending someone off on a journey. That's levaya. At a funeral. So Apamila Ve'ishi, now my husband's finally going to spend more time with me. He'll accompany me when I go places, explains the Chizkuni. Fascinating pshat. He says Apamila Ve'ishi because you have three boys, so mommy's carrying Reuven and Shimon, or holding Reuven and Shimon's hands, each one of her hands as they cross the street. Somebody needs to hold Levi's hands. Of course, Yaakov is going to come with me to watch our third son, because who else is going to take care of him? So that's her hope. And finally, number four, Vatar Od B'Teil Bein Vatomer Hapam Ude Es Hashem Al Kein Kroshmo Yehuda Vatamer Miledes. This time I will thank Hashem. She calls him Yehuda and she stops childbearing for the moment. Later she has two more children, obviously. Three more children if you include Leah. But at this point, Vatamer Miledes, she stops having children in succession as she has up until now. So Rashi says, let's look more carefully at that pasuk, Hapam Odes Hashem. Why is it that on this occasion, Hapam, this time, right? The last pasuk says, Hapam Ilava Ishi, this time, now that I have three, my husband will of course be necessary to accompany me. Hapamo des Hashem Dafka. This time, there'll be thankfulness. There'll be thanks to Hashem. And not before. So Rashi says, because now I've taken more than my share. Originally, everyone assumed there would be a total of four wives, 12 children divided by four wives, each one has three, and now Leah suddenly has a fourth above and beyond what was projected, above and beyond that fair share that each one of them would have. She has a fourth child. Hapamo des Hashem said, this calls on me, on Leah, to offer thanks. That's how Rashi understands it. So now, there's a Gemara in Brachos you have on the sheet right beneath those psukim that highlights something about this response that she has, which seems a little bit strange. Va'om Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Miyom Shebarak Hakadosh Baruch Hu Asalamo. Listen to the drama of that statement. From the day that Hakadosh Baruch Hu created his world, Lohaya Adam Shodol Hakadosh Baruch Hu, there was no person who thanked Hashem. Until Leah came along and she thanked Hashem. Shenemar apam odes Hashem. As our pasuk says in Vayetze, on this occasion I will thank Hashem. Very, very interesting. Hapam odes Hashem is the first time that anyone has ever thanked Hakadosh Baruch Hu from the time that Hashem created the world. Really? This is the first time? How could that be? The Avos never thanked Hashem? Of course they did. We see it many times. They built Mizbechos on numerous occasions. And they gave thanks to HaKadosh Baruch Hu for the miracles that Hashem bestowed upon them. And here, we say that Leah, for the first time in humanity, someone thanked Hashem. How could it be? What's Pshat in the Gemara? That's question number one. Question number two takes us to a more careful reading from the Pesukim before. So before we get to the second question, let's stop here. We'll revisit that question in context of the other questions, but at least one pshat. Well, it happens to be one of my favorite pshatim in all of Chumash, but certainly in Parashat Vayetze. Find this Maram Shek. This is all also brought down from Blazer Silver by from Warman Kutza. This from his Rebbe Blazer Silver, and you'll find it also in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Herman. Anyone read All for the Boss? Required reading for every American Jew. Rabbi Herman, author of the subject of the book, All for the Boss, written by his daughter, Ruchama Shein. Very, very important book. So he also offered the following pshat. He said, let's think about what's unique. Obviously, if the Gemara is saying that Leah was the first person to thank Hashem, it can't mean she was the only person to thank Hashem. Historically, it doesn't appear to be correct. It must be some unique twist, something, some new dimension of Hodah that she adds by naming Yehuda in this way. And offering this thanks, Hapam Odes Hashem. What was unique? So every other time where there was an offering of Hodah, whoever it was, offered that Hodah and moved on. Not that they didn't remember it, not that it didn't become part of the consciousness necessarily, but Leah did something unique. Leah was the first person to take that emotion, to take that sense of appreciation of HaKadosh Baruch Hu for what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did, and implant it to, I guess we would say, to program it into the name of her son. To make it part of his identity, and not just his identity, but by the way that it became part of his mahus, it ultimately became a very prominent and constant, encounter in her own life, right? How many times from a very young age does a mother say her son's name? Yehuda, time to wake up. Yehuda, who stole the cookies from the cookie jar? Yehuda, time to brush your teeth. Yehuda, time to go to school. Yehuda, what are you having for lunch, right? Again and again and again. Addressing the child a million times over the course of raising the child. And every time she said that name, there was that spark, there was that reigniting of the feeling that she must have felt on the moment that she gave the thanks to Hashem in the first place. Hapam odes Hashem. Right now, at this very moment, I had that Hakadosh Baruch Hu, so I'm going to make it an intrinsic part of this child's identity and address him in that way every time that we speak, every time that I talk to him, every time that I do something in the process, in the course of raising this child. It was a constant. And that was the Chiddush of Leah. That was what she did differently than anyone before her. Hapam Odas Hashem, in this unique fashion, she made that Hakaras HaTov part and parcel of every time that she connected and addressed and spoke to her son, because it was part of his name. And obviously that should have some meaning to us on one level when we think about the fact that our names, why are we called Jews? Jews come from Judah, from Yehuda, Yehudim, all B'nai Yehuda all come from that. We're mostly from the Shevet of Yehuda. We all stem from that quality that Leah taught us, and not only put in her son, but made it in our consciousness that we are Jews. So we have to always live with that Hakaras HaTov that Leah made sure was a consistent part of her life, in the way that she raised her child and named her son accordingly. So that's as far as the meat of Hakaras HaTov in general. But I think we can go further. And not only recognize that encapsulates our identity as Yidden, but today of all days, to quote Rabbi Lam said that I don't know if he said it in the context of the holiday, although he probably did, that the Musig, the concept of Thanksgiving, it's a misnomer if you want to apply it to Jews. It's not really an accurate description of the way we hold ourselves to the meat of Hakaras HaTov. Instead of Thanksgiving, which is a particular act, a blip on the radar, a spot on the map, it would be better to use the term thankfulness, because that's a consciousness, that's a perpetual emotion that's always reinventing itself and always recurring, and hopefully as it continues also becoming stronger and remains in front of us, on our radar at all times, not just as a blip, but as something that never leaves the forefront of our awareness. And if we're going to be Yehudim, if we're going to be Jews, so the way that that's expressed is not through Thanksgiving, the way that that's expressed is through thankfulness. A midah instead of an action. An action is something that happens once a year. A midah is something that happens 24/7, because it isn't something that's happening. It's something that is. It's something that exists and something that is definitional to who we are. But if that's the case, so what happened beforehand? Right? What happened up until this point? Good. The names before Yehuda, Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, okay, apparently there is a sense of thankfulness there too, right? When it comes to Reuven, what does she say? She says, Ki amr ki ro Hashem va'ani. She recognized Hakaras HaTov, a recognition of the good, that Hashem sees me, He hears me. In the case of Shimon, Hapami Laves Ishi, he created a new context that makes the relationship more apt to grow by the time she had a third child, right? So isn't there Hakaras HaTov there also? Isn't there a Hodah in the first three children as well, right? Isn't she recognizing that she was in position now to be more loved in the eyes of Yaakov than ever before? But yet it's not the case that we highlight Hapam Odes Hashem, even though those names did highlight those points. Elamai, it seems from the Gemara, that she did not see those names when she gave those names in the same purpose of Hodah. Rather, what were they? I guess if we look more carefully, Ki Ato Yehavani Ishi. Right, we said before there was a ray of hope. Now something's going to change. She wasn't focused so much on the past as much as the name centered on the future. Atoyev Anishi. Now there's potential for what's going to come next. He's going to love me. Right? Shimon, Hashem heard my cry. And Vayitin Li Gamezeh, once again, Atoyev Anishi. With another opportunity. With another situation that furthers the cause of the relationship and gives it a better chance than before. And finally, Hapam Ilav Ishi Eli. Now there's more potency. There's an opportunity that didn't exist before. So it's about the future. It's about the potential. So even if there was Hakaras HaTov, the purpose of the name didn't focus on the Hakaras HaTov. The purpose of the name focused on the future, as if there was a tefillah integrated into the naming, and as based on what we said before, a constant tefillah, hoping that something would occur now differently than before with the new children that were born. Now, if that's the case, so we have yet to understand why didn't you do that the fourth time? If this was such a priority at the forefront of her mind, such a dream, such a hope that she had, why wasn't she davening for it on the fourth occasion? Why isn't there a tefillah in the birth of Yehuda and his naming as well, just as there were tefillos in the first three names? As an aside, if you look in the Parshas Levi, in the beginning of Parshas Shmos, where the Torah again lists all the names of the Shvatim, so he says that all the names of the Shvatim were lahoros, to demonstrate that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mashkiach, he's paying attention, he's offering his providence, he gets involved in everything that happens on a day-to-day basis, and therefore the names of the Shvatim, their parents introduced into those names a connection to Hashem, indicating that Hashem, just similar to what we saw by Yehuda, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is misasek. He doesn't ignore what's taking place in this world. He doesn't ignore what's happening in the life of any Jew, but he's very much a part of those lives, and the name needs to recognize that as well. So we see that in the case of Yehuda with the thankfulness. We see that in the case of the tefillos, Atu Yevani Ishi, and Reuven, Shimon, and Levi, but not in the case of Yehuda. So what happened here? What stopped that course of tefillah that existed before, and we don't see it now in the case of the fourth? So to try to answer the question, let's go as follows. There's an answer that's brought by both Rav Schwab as well as Rabbi Lam in his Haggadah, in the royal table on page 114 and 115, and Rav Schwab is in this week's parsha. They both say a similar idea. Try to put the two of them together, and each one can embellish the next. Yes, it's true. There were tefillos when the first three sons were born. But let's try to put ourselves in the shoes of Leah for a moment. When you daven for something, you obviously hope it's going to be fulfilled. Hashem grants Leah a child, and she hopes and prays that this is going to lead to a deepening of a relationship with Yaakov. Again, that relationship that's been strained by love and deceitfulness and his intervention for all this time. And it's almost as if she's there in the moment and the tools are in her hands by the hand of Hashem. And the vehicle has been given to her and the road to success that's ahead of her, the answering of her tefillos is wide open for her to access. But the bubble bursts. Reuven is born and things don't change. So then once again, she has another shot. Shimon is born, and another blessing from Hashem, an opportunity for Yaakov to recognize her, to give her the place that belongs to her, the place that she longs for in the destiny of the Avos and the Imos, and that fails too. And then there's Levi, three children, and she feels, Apam Levani Ishi Eli, it can't fail now. He's got to be there for me. And Yaakov absolutely must come through on this occasion. It's impossible otherwise, and that sadly also doesn't yield desired results. It's a tragic, like almost pathetic narrative. We feel bad for Leah. We have to feel bad. She's been crying since she's a child. And for whatever reason, it wasn't in Hashem's plan. And while she's blessed with giants of sons, six of the holy Shiftikah, which she hoped would come in tandem, a life of bonding with one of the holy Avos, in the same way that Rachel did, was not what Hashem had in mind. So imagine her pain. It's so sad. As an aside, Neuberger quoted, I think he said from the Tzar, there's a tremendous irony and lesson nonetheless that we can take from this, that when you think about how Leah cried her whole life, davened her whole life, yearning to be with Yaakov. Rachel davened her whole life to have children. And what happens? The roles are reversed. Lo'asad Lavo, in the future, in the Olam Ha'emes, who's buried with Yaakov? Leah, in a certain sense, had her tefillos answered because she is for eternity buried in Maros Machpelah next to her husband. Something that Rachel wasn't zochah to. And on the flip side, who was the one who was Mavaka Albana? Who is the one that all Yidden, come and to associate with as their mother, even though she only had a small slice of the pie, as it were. Rachel with two children, Yosef and Binyamin, versus the other 10 that came from the rest of the wives. Rachel is the one who is Mavaka Avodah. All children, all of the Israel, look at Rachel as Mama Rachel. It's fascinating, right? Mamash, the tables were turned. Their tefillos did not go to waste. Hashem said, all in good time you'll see where your roles, where you will step into those roles, and your tefillos will be answered. But at that moment, Leah is suffering from this tragic story of failure, of getting nothing that she hoped for. So what would you do at this point? I don't know. What I would do is, you know, call it a day, throw in the towel. Maybe someone else would do worse, would even be resentful. Maybe I'd be resentful. How can I even speculate? Say, Hashem, I have to suffer through so much, a childhood nightmare of everyone telling me I'm going to marry the biggest rush in the world. I'm going to marry Esav. You save me from that only to trap me in this awkward situation of being caught between my sister and my husband playing second fiddle. So why? Why, Hashem? That's not how I wanted it to happen. And then a fourth child is born. Then Yehuda is born. And there are no tefillos. It isn't the time for tefillah. But it's also not a time for resentment or bitterness. Only for praise and thanks. Yehuda, the essence of thanks. Leah did something so difficult, she put her life's dream aside. What she thought was the vision for her future, and she puts that on the back burner, and she says, Hashem, hold on for a second with the tefillos. You didn't give me what I wanted, what I've been asking for, but I don't care. Thank you for what I do have. Because even if it's not what I wanted, or what I think I needed, or what I think I wanted, thank you no matter what. Hapam ode es Hashem. Now I will thank you. For what? For nothing. I'm going to thank you because I owe you thanks for nothing, but everything. At the same time, you didn't give me what I was hoping for, but you really gave me everything I do have. And that was a first. It was a first in history. Where up until now, the thankfulness that's demonstrated by the predecessors of Leah, Avraham Avinu wins the war for Sodom and he's saved. He emerges safe and wealthy and powerful from his encounters with both Mitzrayim and Gerar. He's blessed with children at an advanced age, and Hashem promises him innumerable descendants, promises of Eretz Yisrael. He had it all. It was in the bag, of course. So he was happy, and most certainly he thanked Hashem. And every other example of Hoda afterwards follows the same pattern. Leah, however, blazes a new trail. Thank you, Hashem, whether you answer my tefillos or you don't answer my tefillos. Thank you even when you don't answer my tefillos, because you've still given me so much instead. So on the one hand, there's something very great here, which I don't want to sweep under the rug because it's very powerful. We don't innately have an instinct, as Rav Schwab says elsewhere in his commentary on tefillah, to thank Hashem for being alive. Now, how could we? Chofetz Chaim Vavil says that, you know, to explain the challenge of thanking for what we do have, the things we take for granted, for our lives. So he says, you know, we're born into what we're given. We're born into what we were given. And life is one of those things. Health is, Baruch Hashem, generally one of those things. And the ability to exist is something that we take for granted because we don't know what the alternative is. So to thank Hashem without knowing what it is to suffer without that is very significant. For Leah to be able to thank Hashem for what she was given without experiencing the infertility that Rachel suffered through, that's not easy. That was monumentous, and that's the Pam Otis Hashem. Miyom Shabarak Shabarak Wasalamo, she was the first one. She was the first one to be able to appreciate what she had without having, or at least express that, without knowing so easily what it meant to not have that. That was special. That was very special. And it's an avoda. But we need to achieve that. We need to be actively looking for ways to appreciate what Hashem says. Like, you know, we say it in davening all the time. Kol ha-neshama ta-halaka. Chazal say, what that hints to, every neshama, I'll call neshima u-neshima for every breath we take. I'll call neshima u-neshima. Chazal is trying to communicate. David HaMelech is trying to communicate through Tehillim. That every breath needs thank you, and needs a halal, needs a hodah. Not just a thanksgiving, that's a one and done, but a thankfulness that endures and that persists always, all the time, even for things that we would otherwise take for granted. That's what Leah demonstrates. But there's something else very important here, Rabbosai. There's something else very important. Let me read to you from the words of Rabbi Lam in the Haggadah. This is the first time in scriptural history a great soul reached into the heights of the spirit and recognized that thankfulness is more than thanksgiving, that it's a way of reacting to God's very presence and not merely paying a debt for his favors. We ought to bear with great pride and sense of responsibility the name of Yehuda. To thank Hashem for nothing when we didn't get what we wanted, and to still be able to say thank you, Hashem, for what we have, it's not just not taking things for granted. It's realizing that what we have means that HaKadosh Baruch Hu already has a clear and present connection to me. When Hashem answers my prayers miraculously, gives me something I wasn't expecting, something I couldn't count on for, or something I was desperate for, and suddenly I'm blessed with the answer to my prayers. So then we suddenly feel Hashem's with us. We feel Hashem's with us. To feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us, that the thankfulness engenders, again, reacting to God's very presence, that I'm with Him right now as we speak, as I thank Him, that's something special. That's something special. And along those lines, Rishab says that what was unique about Leah was that she didn't mention, when she named Yehuda, she didn't mention that what she was thanking Hashem for was as she had previously. But she stated generally, let me thank Hashem. Before I had opportunities, I had this new chance to come close to Yaakov. What made the fourth child unique was, yes, the other ones included thankfulness. This one carried thankfulness with no strings attached, without outlining what it is or why I should be thankful, but just thanks. Just thanks. The fact that I got anything at all, what does that demonstrate? It means that Hashem has favored me and has thought enough of me to give me a gift. And the recipient feels joy even if the gift is simple, maybe has little intrinsic value, but it's something. I got anything from the king, and I'll treasure that forever. Because it demonstrates that I'm communicating, I'm interacting. My life is always connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that itself is cause for Odah. That itself is what Yaakov's birth inspired within Leah, and that's what made her reaction to his birth unique, and the Hapam Oda Hashem, and made her the first. So we thank Hashem so constantly, so consistently. Psuke de Zimra, we're singing to Hashem. If we actually thought of the songs we sing to Hashem as thanks, we'd give it a lot more passion. There would be more of happiness, and a smile would come onto your face. You'd be excited about the parts of tefillah that thank Hashem, because again, with a recognition of what we're doing, it would conjure up in your mind things to be thankful for. If a person has, number one, the awareness of what he's doing, but number two, also a sense that everything that I have should not be taken for granted. It's all a gift from Hashem. Sometimes we, even if we can't actually experience, we don't hope we experience what it means to go through tzaras, but at the very least, when we pass by someone or encounter someone who doesn't, I don't know if some of you guys heard, but there was a terrible loss in Passaic today. I know about it through a number of channels, but one of the Rebbeim Yeshiva sent out a message yesterday, which you may have received through other media, that his son's roommate in high school, his father is terribly sick with coronavirus. A young man, he has a kid in high school, and there were a lot of tefillos said yesterday. Unfortunately, he didn't make it. Unfortunately, I've had Talmidim this year who lost a parent at a young age, and I experienced, you know, through them and with them, terrible pain to lose a parent at a young age. Lose a parent at a young age, Rahman al-Islam. When you look at your parents today, around the Thanksgiving dinner or wherever, in your house, you know, when you're in kindergarten and they have you cut out a turkey and they ask you, what are you thankful for? And you write in your you know, in your kindergarten handwriting and they put it on the bulletin board. What are you thankful for? I'm thankful for mommy and daddy. You know, are people 20 years weiter, 15 years weiter, making the same statement of thankfulness around the table? Thank you, Hashem, that I have parents. You know how many people lost parents to coronavirus? This is not distant from us. This is very much in our reality. What would our lives be without the constant support? Physical, emotional, financial, and everywhere our parents support us. Where would we be without a parent? Who even wants to imagine something like that? It's a terrible, terrible thing. It has to inspire a constantly. Every time you see your parents, those of you who are at home more frequently, you're lucky. I'm jealous of you. I don't see my parents that often, especially, you know, as a result of coronavirus. I not nearly as much as I used to. Every time I see them, thank you, Hashem, that I had parents. Thank you, Hashem, that I had parents. Just one simple example. The more we develop a consciousness of thankfulness, not just a Thanksgiving, a one-time thing, a thankfulness, it will transform your relationship with Hashem, I guarantee you. Transform your davening, and it will transform your overall connection with every time we have an opportunity to be makir tov. Hashem, there's so many things that I should not take for granted. Thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, Rabbi, I think we'll stop here. Maybe we'll leave the lundas for another time. But I want to give a